Welcome to We've Got Issues. I'm Joshua Holland, and as always, I'm here with alternate managing editor Elizabeth Preza. Hi, Liz.
Hello.
Hell of a week, huh? Everything seems compressed in the Trump era.
Oh, I don't know. I've kind of missed it. What's been going on?
It seems like it was just a day or two ago that we were talking about these wildly inhumane conditions at Trump's concentration camps and Jeffrey Epstein's arrest. It's weird. It's how quickly we've shifted, you know, from these like massive stories to racism gate.
I actually, you know, watch CNN basically for my job, and I've been watching 48 hours pretty much nonstop of just this squad versus Trump thing. It's really truly amazing to me that there's nothing else these people want to talk about.
There's a lot going on, you know. There really is. I write a weekly column for Raw Story. It's like a roundup of things that are fly under the radar because we're always paying attention to this crazy circus up here, and there's all this grifting and corruption down here. It's easy to miss. Anyway, we're recording this week's show hours before I take off to go scuba diving for a week. And amazing. I can tell you that I need a break really badly. Like, it gets to you after a while. And sometimes I'm a bit envious of people who don't pay attention to the madness.
Definitely. I feel that 100%. But it is, you know, you do have to remain vigilant. It's just difficult sometimes. Like, sometimes I just want to check out and be like, I'm not going to deal with this anymore. And then I'm like, oh, wait, but there are babies dying and I have to care.
Yeah, we have a duty to be engaged, right? Yeah. I mean, either that or just give it up and say, okay, we're going to be a fascist country. Mm-hmm. We have a great guest this week. David K. Johnston is the editor-in-chief of DCReport.org, and he's a great source of knowledge about Donald Trump. He's been covering him for literally decades, decades. So he's a great like Donald Trump whisperer. He knows all the secrets, all the things that the media largely has ignored. The media, it's amazing, has given this guy a pass on a lot of really serious issues like money laundering. It's amazing to me.
Right.
First, a couple of items in the news. Al Green, the Democratic rep, not the smooth soul singer, is trying to force a vote on impeachment. I find this a bewildering move, and I say that as someone who strongly favors impeaching the man, baby, in chief. One of my central arguments for impeachment, or at least for launching an impeachment inquiry, is that the hearings would be like must-watch TV, and Americans would get an education into the serious crimes and abuses of power that the Mueller probe unearthed, and also other corruption-related matters, the emoluments, all of this. And there's a chance, just a chance, that broadcasting those hearings live to the entire country might break through the noise and the filters of our preferred media. So if you're a Fox News viewer, right now you think it's all a nothing burger and Mueller found nothing. And, if you tuned in and you actually saw those hearings, you'd be hard pressed to leave with that impression. And according to Gallup, I wrote about this at The Nation, by the way, according to Gallup, when the Watergate hearings began, only 17% of Americans favored removing Richard Nixon from office. And when he resigned, that number had grown to 58%. So the hearings themselves totally shifted public opinion. So I fail to see the logic of holding a vote without the hearings. That's like, it just misses the entire point. And I also think holding a vote and having the resolution be defeated by a lopsided majority, what does that do? It only makes Trump's claims that there's no collusion, no obstruction, no nothing, seem more credible for casual observers who don't pay a lot of attention. Right. Where are you on impeachment, Liz?
So that's why you're saying you think that the impeachment inquiry is the best route, because that would be what requires the hearings?
You can have a hearing you can launch an impeachment and hold impeachment hearings in the Judiciary Committee, or you can start an impeachment inquiry, which actually happens in the Rules Committee. And I don't know why I know that obscure fact, but I have a lot of obscure facts, actually. Yeah. And the difference is that if you pass, well, there's a few differences, but a primary difference, I believe both would be broadcast live and everybody would watch. The primary difference is that if you get to the end of the impeachment hearing in the Judiciary Committee, you can pass articles of impeachment. The House can then vote on them. If they vote on them, then it triggers a vote in the Senate. That's not something that Mitch McConnell can block.
Right.
With an inquiry, it does not necessarily trigger a Senate vote. So when people are like, oh, it would be terrible to hold these hearings and then have the Senate just acquit, vote to acquit.
Right. Right.
Well, an inquiry doesn't necessarily lead to that. And who knows what's going to happen in the interim? You know, I don't believe that Republicans love, like a lot of Republican elected officials actually love Trump. If his support cratered among Republicans, I think they'd flee.
No, which honestly, it's a good case for it. The people, I definitely am for, you know, an impeachment inquiry, impeachment proceedings even. The people I really don't understand is this like, oh, we're thinking about impeachment eventually, but we need to wait for more information. It's like that doesn't, we're here. Like you can take a pretty hard look at all of the information that we have and make a really educated decision on this. And I don't really like, that's kind of what Nancy Pelosi's MO is. And I don't really understand it. That seems to me to be very cowardly.
Yeah, I agree. I don't understand it at all. And I would point out that Republicans initiated impeachment proceedings against Bill Clinton I think it was 16 days after the Starr report dropped. That was for lying about sex, and they did it during a lame duck session when they had just lost seats in a midterm. And that was the first time that the out party had lost seats in a midterm in like 80 years. So like, Democrats are always afraid of their own shadow. Yeah. Republicans are just like,
Republicans are ruthless.
Like YOLO, you know, like hold my beer. We're just going to do it.
Oh, they're so ruthless. It's amazing. It's really like, I feel like Democrats need somebody who's just as ruthless, because I don't understand why we don't have the equivalent of a Mitch McConnell in our party. Just circumventing all of the rules. Everything.
It's maddening.
Get what he wants done.
Yeah. It's maddening. And they're like, and I think that there is really something in the Democratic Party's culture that says if we model like respect for norms, somehow we'll shame them into respecting the norms. And it's like, dude, it doesn't work that way. Where have you been? Have you paid any? I mean, they fucking accused the last president of being born in Kenya. Like, these people are not going to care that you're like, you know, that you respect the norms. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah. Oh no. If just one more person respects the norms, then we'll get it.
We're going to shame Mitch McConnell. Dude, Mitch McConnell has no shame.
He had
a shame-adectomy. His shame glands were removed. Like, what are you thinking about?
God, he's terrifying.
He is. Did you catch the regime's face plant rolling out their new, I think it's called the Super Duper Immigration Act of 2019?
No, I didn't.
So, okay, it's actually not new. They introduced this idea last year, but I guess they've worked with Republicans in Congress to tweak it. I'll skip the details, which, as you can imagine, are horrible, because they decided to delay the rollout until the furor from Trump's very racist attacks on the squad dies down. And because it has zero chance of passing, because Mitch McConnell, so they held this thing at the White House. They were going to do a big McGilla. Mitch McConnell then tells reporters that he wouldn't waste time on it. And I think we should just pause for a second to appreciate what a like diss it is for McConnell to shrug off a signature policy proposal from the White House like that. This was an effort. It was like a signature effort spearheaded by Jared Kushner. And I mean, like everything else he touches, it turns to shit, but that is remarkable where McConnell was just like, Nope. We're not going to even play your stupid game and rejigger. Like, it's just not happening.
Wow. No, I hadn't caught that. Mitch McConnell has too much power. I really feel that.
He has way too much power.
I really feel that.
By the way, Amy McGrath, his opponent in 2020, his Democratic opponent, seems to be doing a kick-ass campaign. It's an extremely difficult race, obviously, in Kentucky. Right. But Mitch McConnell's favorability numbers are not good. And no, McGrath not. Seems really exciting. So you never know.
She kind of steps in it, though, with the Kavanaugh comment, because she came out right after she announced and said that she would have voted for Kavanaugh. And I think that if you're going up against Mitch McConnell, that I don't really see how that can play out.
It was a very bad, it was a bad stumble, but it was early, right? Like, so it's just one of those things I don't think anybody's going to remember next November. And the other thing is, it's going to be an election about Trump. And if he has long enough negative coattails, that is to say, if Democrats, you know, overcome the voter suppression and the disinformation and are really ready to crawl over broken glass to vote against Trump, then it's possible that that surge of Democratic votes, it's not a sure thing, will take down some unexpected candidates. So some people who you would think would be pretty safe, like Mitch McConnell. Mm-hmm. Anything on your radar this week, Liz?
Yeah, well, I was reading this article that I thought was interesting by Corey Shockey in The Atlantic. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. She's a former advisor to John McCain. And she wrote an opinion piece about Republicans needing millennials to survive. And I thought it was interesting. She was trying to make the case that conservatives aren't living up to conservative principles, but that if they were, they would be able to attract millennial voters. And I think, I mean, that premise is just wrong. Like when you're looking at millennial voters and like what their interest is and where their priorities lie, like, It's climate change. Like, that is 100% the future issue that we are dealing with.
So it's not avocado toast and tax cuts. It's climate change.
It's climate change.
I gotcha.
Yeah. I mean, avocado toast would be nice also.
Sure. Yeah, of course. We had a chance for taco trucks on every corner. We fucked it up. it's interesting. You know, they say that there's a lot of research that shows, millennials are the most progressive group in, I don't know, however many generations. Mm-hmm. But when you dig into those numbers, it's really that they're just the most diverse group. White millennials are not particularly more progressive than the previous generation, Gen X or Y or whatever it is. And it's going to be very hard for them to attract younger people of color, because that's what they'd have to do.
Right. Yeah, no, it's a very diverse voting block, but we're massive. I mean, we're about to take over, you know?
Yeah, you are about to take over. We're all scared.
Ready? Excited? It's going to be a good time. I mean,
I welcome my millennial overlords.
We just need to come up with like economic solutions that are going to fight climate change. It just seems so stupid that like this isn't what the thing that we're talking about the most. Like the economic opportunities in trying to change the way our economy, like having an economy based off fossil fuels, changing that into a clean economy. The Green New Deal has a lot of criticism, gets a lot of criticism, and it warrants some of it, because they're like, these big sweeping changes we're going to make, and obviously people hate that idea. But if you dig into it, if you actually look at it, like these are really the solutions that we should be talking about and coming up with. And we should be spending all of our time focusing on the new economy and how we're going to make sure that future generations can drink water, breathe clean air, and also like exist in this technology change we're about to have happen. We don't need to be talking about Trump's stupid tweet.
Yeah, I could not agree more. Before it was the new Green Deal, people on the broad left, Democrats and progressives, talked about a Green Apollo project. And, just had the anniversary of the moon landing on the moon.
So cool.
And I was just watching a documentary the other day, and at the height of the Apollo program, they employed 600,000 people to work on that.
Wow.
600,000 people were working on that in one capacity or another. So yeah, we need to do that for climate change.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
Sorry, just really quickly. These kinds of things, like, they generate so much pride, right? Like, years, decades later, we're still celebrating the Apollo mission. Like, we still talk about it. And I think, like, having our attention, focusing our attention on these, like, constructive solutions would just be so much better.
Yes.
I didn't know they employed that many people. That's insane.
It is insane. And what we're doing instead is we're basically ceding a lot of these opportunities, these economic opportunities, to other countries that are leading right. in the production of wind technology, solar technology, right. et cetera,
well,
et cetera.
We need to make America great again, and Donald Trump needed the support of coal miners. And so yeah. we have to invest in fossil fuels, even though the future is in clean energy. And it's so stupid. It's time for millennials to take over, is my point.
Yeah, it is. It is. I'm ready to have you guys take over. And with that, let's take a quick break and then come right back with David K. Johnson. Folks, stay tuned. Welcome back. I'm always happy to welcome my next guest, who has been kind of a favorite of mine for years on the old show. David K. Johnston is a former Pulitzer Prize winning tax reporter for the New York Times. He is currently the editor-in-chief of the DC Report. That's dcreport.org, not .com, .org. David, welcome to the brand new show.
Well, thank you for having me.
Thanks for taking the time. Folks, just in the interest of disclosure, let me note that the DC Report has some sort of working agreement with the sponsors of this show. I don't even know the details, but we are, let's say, distant cousins in the progressive media. David, the big story this week is obviously Trump telling four young women of color who happen to be duly elected members of the House of Representatives to go back to their shithole country where they came from. And I am paraphrasing. Did you see this poll conducted by Reuters Ipsos that found that his net approval among Republicans had increased by 5 points after his attacks?
Well, I hadn't, but sadly, that's sort of not surprising. You know, 40 years ago, when I was reporting for the LA Times, stories started to emerge in which Republicans were being told by the professionals in their party that you need to begin adapting to the future America, which is going to be a majority-minority country, that is, white Europeans are no longer going to be the majority group in the country. And instead of that, we've seen this beckoning back to an imagined era when everything was just wonderful because black and brown people knew their place and women stayed home and kept their mouths shut.
Yes.
You know, the era when Ruth Bader Ginsburg could graduate first in her law school class from both Harvard and Columbia the same year, because they let her study at both places, and no one would hire her to be a lawyer.
Yeah.
And this is really troubling. And what it tells me is that we are going to have an election in November of next year that clearly will send us in the direction of becoming a fascist country, or we're going to become more like the Europeans and more accepting. And boy, where that's going, I certainly hope that the direction that we go is not where Donald Trump wants us to go. But he's made his bet here, and he's made it clearly, and it's not going to go away. So
yeah.
If the candidate running against him is Kamala Harris, Donald will come up with some term, the code for which will be black whore.
Yeah, it's going to be the ugliest election, and it's obviously right. very clear. What's interesting, or one thing that's interesting, there's a lot of interesting stuff going on, is that he is obviously going to double down on the strategy that saw a blue wave election in the midterms. Now, obviously, the electorate will not be composed, will not have the exact same composition, but he's doubling down on the same strategy. Speaking of the House of Representatives, I want to play a short clip from the House floor yesterday. This is Eric Swalwell, a rep from California. He's being interrupted in this clip by Chris Collins, a Republican from New York. Collins, if you recall, was arrested by the FBI last year and charged with wire fraud and lying to the FBI and other things, and then won his reelection because because partisanship is a hell of a drug. Can we play that real quick?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. We have an opportunity today to condemn or condone. Birtherism is racist. Saying a Mexican judge can't be fair because of his heritage is racist. Saying immigrants from Mexico are rapists is racist. Saying there were good people on both sides in Charlottesville is racist. Calling African countries shithole countries is racist. And telling four members of this body to go home is racist.
Gentleman will state
do you think it's not racist?
Gentleman will state his point of order.
Do you think it's not
so
racist?
So the gentleman will suspend. Gentleman will state his point
of order.
Is
that what you're saying right now, Mr. Collins?
Gentleman will suspend.
Mr. Collins, is
gentleman
it not racist to say these things? Because you can say that right now.
The gentleman from California is out of order. The gentleman from gentleman from California shall suspend. For what purpose does the gentleman from Georgia rise?
I make a point of order. The gentleman's words are unparliamentary, and I request they be taken down.
Clerk will report the words.
David, I just find it a bit weird that we're debating something so obvious. Like, Trump's history of racism literally spans decades, and it's like we're talking about, you know, it's like the sun rises in the east, we're all going to die someday, and Trump is racist. It's amazing that we're having this kind of contrived debate about this. Your thoughts?
Well, most white Americans don't really understand what racism is. I mean, that, we got to begin with that point. There are a lot of people who think racism means that, you know, you've tried to hang a black young man from a tree or castrate him. They don't understand the disparate treatment of people based on the color of their skin or their religion or their gender. And there's a real core fundamental problem here with that. And so you'll notice the defenders of Donald consistently say he didn't say anything racist. And by that, they mean he didn't call him the N-word. He didn't say something like along those lines. And the Democrats need to be smarter about this. I don't think they're being particularly smart about it. Get off that he's racist. What he said is outrageous.
Yeah.
That members of Congress should leave because they're not happy with America. You know who the most unhappy person is in America with America?
Donald Trump.
It's Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And understand that whatever Donald says something, and people should know, I've been covering Donald for 31 years, longer than any other journalist, that when Donald says something like this, he's talking about himself. And throw it back at him. That's where Elizabeth Warren and Kamala Harris have been much smarter than everybody else. And if either one of them is a nominee, I think we'll do a very good job of dealing with him. By the way, I don't believe he would agree to debate either of them. And hopefully the Democrats will be smart enough to say, well, of course not. Donald's afraid of a girl. Donald is afraid of girls. He doesn't have the courage to do a debate.
You know, I disagree with you there. It's rare that we disagree, David, but
that's okay.
But look, I think you're overlooking his narcissism. I believe he believes deep down that he is the greatest debater in the history of debating and that he will wipe the floor with them. And he cannot admit to himself that they have any chance because he has classic narcissistic personality disorder. And it's just, I believe he thinks he's going to kill him.
Well, Donald's a narcissist. I mean, there's no question about that. And Donald, you know, claims to be the world's greatest expert on 22 subjects. And when you hear him speak about him, if you know anything about those subjects, and in my case, that would be tax, because that's where he said no one in the history of the world knows more than he does.
Right.
He couldn't get through my class at Syracuse Law on tax. And it's not even, it's just broad policy and history. It's not, you know, any detail of the tax law. His narcissism may well drive him to debate, but I wouldn't be surprised, Joshua, if he says, no, why would I debate? I mean, this is I'm not going to do that, or he'll have one debate.
He has to have at least one, because the other thing is that his central argument is that he's a tough guy and he's tougher than all the rest. And just what you said, if there are a number of op-eds, especially if the bobbleheads on Fox News start saying, wait, what is he afraid of? I don't see that he's
that would, no, that would, I think that would force him into having a debate. And remember, Donald is an absolute wimp. He's, you know, he projects himself as being a tough guy. He's a complete and total wimp and always has been.
Yes.
But, you know, hopefully if the nominee is either Kamala Harris or Elizabeth Warren, they will handle Donald in a debate much more smartly than Hillary Clinton did when she was being stalked by Trump.
Yes.
And left with many people the impression that she was weak because she didn't, you know, she didn't have to yell at him or anything, but she didn't turn on him. She didn't push back at him. And it was a really serious mistake on her part. And I'm sure that a lot of effort's going to be put into thinking about how to bait Donald. And by the way, given his remarks about these four women, three of whom are native-born Americans who are more American than Donald, because remember, Donald's only a first-generation American on one side, second-generation on the other. Two of his three wives are immigrants, which means that four of his five children are first-generation Americans on one side.
Yes, you mean anchor babies.
Yes, anchor babies and anchor grandparents. And I think that one of the things to watch for in this is Donald is going to do more of this. As I predicted before he took office, he's becoming more and more erratic. And the Democrats should be focused on how to do things that will get him to say wilder and crazier things. Because Donald creates his own reality. He just makes stuff up. And when he says these things, he believes them.
Yes.
And a smart strategy is going to be to provoke him, to get him to say crazier and crazier things until those 5% of the Republicans who approval went up with Donald began to say, wait a minute, this guy's nuts.
Yeah.
And by the way, every one of his biographies, all of us, you know, we have different views about the world. Some of us don't get along with each other. But by God, absolutely all of us agree on a simple fact, as do people who covered Donald up close without writing a book about him. He's nuts.
Yes.
He's mentally ill. He is deranged. And I realize it's hard for Americans. How could somebody become president of the United States if they're crazy? Well, let me see. Nero, King George III. I could name 50 other people. The world is full of leaders who are crazy.
Yes. Yes. By the way, that poll that found that his net favorability numbers had increased by 5% among Republicans also found that they had decreased by 10% among independents. And I think you're very right about how easy it is to bait him into going over the top and making it awkward for fellow Republicans to defend him. And I also hope, and this is unrelated, I also hope that Democrats make a very compelling argument against his claims that he has accomplished many of his promises, because he hasn't accomplished any of his promises as they were promised. So even the tax bill, which I'm going to ask you about in a second, even the tax scam, yes, they got that through, but it was a complete violation of what he promised the American people when he was on the campaign trail. He said that he was going to pay more and the average, you know, middle class family was going to have this deep, deep cut. And that did not happen. It was what eventually passed was a complete violation of his campaign promise. And if they just focus on the erratic stuff and the racism and the crazy things he says and the tweets, they're not going, you know, I worry that they're not going to be aggressive enough in pushing back on his claim that he's, you know, accomplished all of these. He's better than any other president, and he has all of these accomplishments. Do you subscribe to the idea that he attacked these freshman reps to shift the dialogue away from his connection to child sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein and the coverage of these, you know, concentration camps, the horrific treatment of migrants and asylum seekers in his concentration camps? Did he do it intentionally?
Yes, Donald is an absolute master of distraction, and he understands that the news media is like a moth drawn to a bright light bulb. And so all he has to do is, you know, get the moth to follow him. And most of the reporters covering him don't know how to go check what he says in any deep way. Most of them are covering the horse race, especially as we get into the campaign. And so their reward is not for knowing policy. It's for knowing what the poll said yesterday. And Donald is brilliant at exploiting this. You got to admire the man. He is, you know, the most successful con artist in the history of the world. He conned his way into the White House. and journalists played a major role in this by not reporting what's in the public record about him. And, you know, Donald keeps saying he's created this great economy. I did a column at DC Report about a month ago where I simply went and looked up the official statistics. Donald bragged that, hey, we had 3.2% growth in the economy in the first quarter of this year. You know, 3.2% growth in a quarter is the exact average of the last 70 years. It's just average. His job creation numbers, he keeps touting, his job creation numbers are 3% a month below Barack Obama once the economy turned around. By every measure that I looked at, every president from Jimmy Carter up to Donald Trump outperformed him. And Barack Obama, if you only look at his second term, because remember, he inherited this horrible mess, he didn't create it, outperformed him. He is underperforming, yes. And it's right in the data. Ask yourself, have you heard this on MSNBC, on CNN, on the ABC Evening News? No, none of them have reported it. Have they reported that Donald Trump, as I've said repeatedly, was clearly in the cocaine trafficking business with Joseph Wechselbaum, who I write about in my book, The Making of Donald Trump, from the public record? He just didn't get arrested. Lots of people were in the cocaine trafficking business who never got arrested. No, nobody talks about that. That Donald makes up stories that he's sleeping with Madonna and the former Mrs. Alec Baldwin and Carla Bruni, who was First Lady of France, and gets offered the chance by Howard Stern to walk it back, that it's just a fantasy. No, he doubles down. None of that is being told to people. So I encounter people continually, because I do, you know, I don't just do your show, Dan. I do right-wing radio when I get invited. I go give lectures, and people all the time, they come to me and they go, this president has done the greatest job. And not all of them are people who think that because they're racists. And I mean, by the definition, you and I and most people listening to this would talk about, not Donald Trump's definition of a racist. Because we keep spewing his claims and not checking them against the actual record, which is what we are supposed to do as journalists.
And this week we had the great example. I mean, it's a little different, but the media's inability to call blatant racism racism. By the way, I should tell listeners, David may be breaking up a little bit because he has some issues with his internet and power, and he's actually jury-rigged something for us today. So we're lucky to have him on, and you'll forgive if there's a little dropout or two.
Plus no air conditioning.
David, before I let you go, I wanted to talk to you just a little bit about a piece you wrote earlier this month. It's titled, The Radical Republican Tax Cuts Are Bankrupting the Nation. Listeners can find it at dcreport.org. The regime announced this week that the federal government will run a $1 trillion budget this year. The only other time we've done that was at the peak of the Great Recession, when A, tax receipts were down, and B, there was a surge for demand in social services, and C, Congress passed a huge stimulus package. Can you talk briefly about the difference between running a $1 trillion deficit at a moment like that, with those circumstances, and with the purposes of digging us out of that hole, and this current $1 trillion deficit?
Well, the budget deficit is an economic stimulus program, and there's the government spending money it doesn't have because it doesn't have enough tax revenue. The beneficiaries of the tax cut are large corporations, which got a 40% reduction in their tax rate. 40% reduction in their tax rate. Did you get a 40% reduction? No, you did not. In fact, the bottom tax rate in this country was raised from 10% to 12%. And Trump keeps bragging and saying, I doubled the standard deduction from $12,000 for a married couple to $24,000. Well, yeah, but he also took away the personal exemptions. And if you're in a family of four, you're had no change whatsoever. The government this year, 2019, you would have gotten $24,000 of income without any taxes. If you're a couple without kids, you would have gotten about $20,000 with no taxes. So This thing was entirely a fraud. It is borrowing money to support tax cuts for the wealthiest people in this country and the corporations they own. Let me give you a meaningful way to think about this. Right now, every man, woman, and child is being hit with $300 a month more federal debt. Your share of the increasing federal debt is, right now it's actually over $300 a month. Obama was lowering the federal deficit. In his best year, he got it down to under $300 billion. Trump's going to be over $1 trillion this year. He was adding to the federal debt at the rate of a little over $100 a month. So the way to think about this is every month Donald Trump is in office with his policies, you and if you're married and have kids, your spouse and your children are being hit with a $200 eternal obligation that you'll have to pay interest on forever. This is just absolutely outrageous. And a tax cut that is designed to pay for itself and is revenue neutral or revenue positive is a good thing. A tax cut that is financed by borrowing money, and you're beginning to see revving up the argument, we have to cut Social Security, we can't afford health care, we're not repairing, remember, infrastructure. That was the first thing Trump was going to do. Our country is falling apart and people are going to die. We've already had people dying. There are going to be more of this because we're not investing in the future. This is a president and a party, which is no longer the Republican Party. It's the party of Donald. That is decided that we should live and spend like the sun is going to explode at any time, so it doesn't matter. And, you know, maybe you want to live that way. Maybe you don't think about when you get older, or your children or grandchildren, or if you don't have children, your friends and neighbors and other people's children. I'm sure glad that people thought about my life before it started. And we had policies to see to it that I got educated and got to do the other things that all of us got to do because we thought about the future. This is entirely a hedonistic administration that's all about today with no regard to tomorrow. And by the way, just remember the one thing the Republicans have made very clear. Their economic policy, Joshua, is crystal clear. The biggest problem in this country is the rich don't have enough. The reason we don't have even more jobs and more investment is the rich don't have enough. And they found a way to get that money to the rich. Cut the taxes of the rich, and then cut the spending programs that benefit everybody who isn't rich. Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, yes, things like that. That's where we're going. And if you want to live in that kind of society, then you should go vote for Donald Trump. You really should. If you don't want to have individual freedom and liberty, you want a dictator who will decide, you know, what to do and who will appoint judges to the bench who will close the courthouse doors to you and not give you an opportunity to be heard if, say, your pension is stolen or your house is stolen, you should go vote for Donald Trump because he's going to make those things happen for you and you should be very happy about it. If you're anybody else, somebody who's sane, somebody who cares about America as opposed to their own narrow interests, take the week of November when the elections occur off, arrange in advance to go somewhere and drive people to the polls in a district that is flippable. Yeah, I mean, if you live like where I live, you know, there's not going to be any change, but not far from me, there are districts you could drive to and drive people to the polls. The Democrats need to recognize that Donald Trump will lose the popular vote. He may lose by 12 million votes, but he can get a second term. And they have to focus all of their effort on getting people registered, getting people to the polls, having lawyers to enforce people's right to vote in the states of Florida, Georgia, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin, Texas, and Arizona. Those are the states that matter, and they need to put all their effort into it and not make the mistakes that Hillary Clinton made in assuming that, you know, the blue-collar workforce in America was going to be with her, because they clearly weren't.
Yes, absolutely. David, before I let you go, just two more points on the tax issue. One thing that I'm very concerned about is that we have had a very, very long expansion. It is entirely possible that we will be facing another recession soon. And what happens when you're running a $1 trillion deficit at a time of economic growth and a fairly good economy is that it ties lawmakers' hands in the case of a recession. There's no space to do another $900 billion stimulus package when you're already a trillion in the hole. And the other point that I just want to make is that they sold this thing on the idea that it would pay for itself. And a lot of people in the media at least thought that that was a viable argument. And I don't understand why we keep, you know, keep going through the same bullshit. They make the promise again and again. It never comes to be. And, you know, the idea that Republicans are fiscal conservatives kind of remains viable. It remains viable among the media, and it's just crazy. Anyway, David K. Johnston.
Let me just respond to it if you want, Josh.
Yes.
It's real simple.
Please do.
We can spend a lot of money when we get into a recession, and we will get into one sooner or later, probably before the 2020 election. It's just the price of doing that goes up in the long run because we're not paying our bills, and the political pressure to do nothing becomes horrible. And if you do nothing, it's a vicious cycle and the economy will continue to get worse. We would be in much better shape today if the Republicans had given Obama what he wanted. There's a simple algebraic formula here, and they violated it. And the notion that the Republicans are fiscally responsible, you know, the only time they talk about deficit spending and they talk about their concerns.
When a Democrat is in the House.
It's a con game. And why did journalists not get it? Because most of the journalists you see on big national stories, they're innumerate. You know, they're not illiterate. They're highly literate, but they're innumerate. And they understand nothing about economics and fiscal policy. They are dependent on sources who tell them things because they didn't learn these things themselves. And that's itself a big scandal in journalism.
It's pathetic. And folks, just the way it's supposed to go, Keynesian economics, you increase the deficit to address a drop in demand during recessions, then you pay it down when the economy is growing. It's not complicated. David K. Johnston, I believe we're out of time. I want to thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you, Josh.
Folks, read David's stuff at dcreport.org. We're going to take a quick break and then bring Liz Preza back to wrap things up. Stay tuned. And we're back. You know, Liz, one maddening aspect of all of this is these lazy pundits saying that Democrats played into Trump's hands with this. I don't know if you've seen this, but it's a storyline that's been advanced by people like I saw Amy Walters at Cook Political Report had a piece like this. Mike Allen at Axios did this. So the story is that Trump wants to use the squad as a foil to run against in 2020, like a, you know, a Red Scare thing.
Right.
And a racist dog whistle. And by calling out Trump's racism, it links the party closer to the squad, and it links the squad ultimately to the 2020 candidates. And it's like, why is there always so much hand-wringing about Democrats to the point where calling out these remarks, which a majority of Americans say are un-American, is supposedly going to cause a backlash? Is there anything under the sun that won't boomerang on Democrats in these pundits' minds?
Well, I think, you know, part of that analysis is true, which is that Donald Trump is going to use this as a point in his reelection campaign. I mean, I don't know if you saw it today, but he literally just put out a video, like a propaganda video. And at the very end of it, he has this shot that says "one squad under God" at the very, very end of this video. And squad is in scare quotes. It's super bizarre, but I mean, he is going to run on it. That the idea somehow that like by calling out his blatant racism, somehow, you know, Democrats are playing into this grand 5D chess piece game that he's playing.
Yeah.
I don't really buy that. I can't really ascribe that much like political acumen to Donald Trump. I think it has good political instincts, clearly, but in terms of like sitting there and strategizing how he's going to use this fight with the squad to get leverage over his
fanatic base is not really, that really doesn't compute for me. And we need to just be calling out his racism and not use that as an excuse to shy away from the moment. But it's all the Democrats' fault.
It's always the Democrats' fault. And the Democrats are always playing into his hands. And it's just, it's annoying after a while. Yeah. Remember, he is doubling down on the same strategy. As I said to David K. Johnson, he's doubling down on the same strategy that led to a historic backlash in the 2018 midterms. And although the electorate will be slightly different, there's nothing that suggests that he is going to reach beyond his cultish base with this kind of messaging. And what he does, and I think he's never understood this, is that he has this entirely base-focused strategy, and he does not comprehend that when he fires up his base, he fires up the other side's base as well, and the other side's base is bigger, and it's just that simple. Mm-hmm. And I think that reporters, you know, the media does not have a liberal bias. The media has, all human beings have many biases.
Right.
And one of the media's true biases is a, you could call it like an urban bias, or they're a metropolitan bias, right? Mm-hmm. They are liberal in the sense that they tend to not be homophobic. They tend not to be evangelical Christians, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that being hectored for so long has given a lot of reporters like a case of Stockholm syndrome. They're told that they are disconnected from the real America. And they, at some point they internalize it and they go, well, it seems obvious to me and all the people around me that, and all the polls, that the majority of Americans condemn these statements, but I know that I'm an out-of-touch coastal elitist, and it must be playing differently at a diner in Peoria.
Right. Well, it's like the hand-wringing at the New York Times to avoid describing Trump's comments as racist. Like, did you see this? Peter Baker had an article out over the weekend where he described it as racially infused.
Yeah. I mean, the thing that was so funny about that is like,
it's like racist tea. Like, what are you saying?
So that was a response to criticism of like racially tinged, right?
Yeah.
So, or racially charged. So he goes, okay, I better not write racially tinged. How about racially infused? Like, where are you getting this? I wrote on Twitter that I personally like a racist sous vide in a jus of bigotry, which just a dollop of anti-Semitic foam.
Yeah, the dollop is necessary.
I'm fancy like that. I'm a foodie after all.
Yeah, super, super strange. I mean, especially because these people's jobs are to describe events that are going on. Like, your job is to describe what's happening accurately. And if you are unable to put racism on something that's clearly racist, you need to find a different job. It's just, I have a hard time understanding it.
You have one job. Anyway, I think we're about out of time, and I'm, of course, itching to get to my vacation. I would like to thank David K. Johnston and, of course, my co-host, Liz Prezza. You can follow me on Twitter at Joshua Hall, and follow Liz at Lizisms. Lizisms.
Yeah.
You can subscribe to the show on at least Podbean right now. We're going to have more subscription options coming very soon. I'd also like to thank our producer, David Edwards, and John Byrne and Roxanne Cooper and the good folks at Alternet for supporting the show. And of course, I also want to thank you good people for tuning in. Have a terrific week.
When nighttime comes and the day is done, I'll play all night long till the morning sun. Feeling good, playing the blues. Don't stop to eat, don't stop to sleep. Me and my guitar can't be beat. Feeling good, playing the blues for you. You can pay your nickels, you can pay your dimes. You ain't got no money, smile, words fine. feeling good, playing the blues.